Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Coming up, it's a bit of a different show this week as we run you through just what happened at Labour Party Conference 2024, where we spend the week in Liverpool.
And we'll bring you interviews from various MPs, union leaders, industry experts, and all of the reaction from Labour's first conference in government for more than 14 years.
As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media. All that and more coming up later in the programme.
So first, let's get all the reaction from conference and go back to Monday, just after the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves' speech. Take a listen.
I made the choice to means test the winter fuel payment so that it's only targeted at those most in need. I know that not everyone in this hall or in the country will agree with every decision that I make. But I will not duck those decisions. Not for political expediency, not for personal advantage. Faced with that £22 billion black hole that the Conservatives left this year, and with a triple lock ensuring that the state pension will rise by an estimated £1,700 over the course of this Parliament, I judged it the right decision in the circumstances that we inherited.
So I'm here with Matt Torbit, who is a political commentator and a former Labour advisor. Matt, what did you make of Rachel's speech?
I think the delivery itself was strong. I think she's clearly undergone some level of media training. I think it benefited her. I think the key line that I thought was interesting was that we're not going to go back to austerity. But the thing that I and others keep going back to is, if you're going to stick to these cast iron fiscal rules, I don't see how else you bring money in, unless you're going to borrow to invest, which I think the country is vastly in need of and I would support, or you're going to raise taxes on people, of which, you know, she's kept quite quiet about for the time being. I also think she channeled a little bit of her sort of inner Gordon Brown, the whole "this is the Britain I want," it reminded me of that clip that lots of people share of Gordon listing the achievements of the last Labour government and stuff like that. I think on the whole it was fine. I did, just a note, interestingly, and it was only people around me that I noticed, when she said there's tough decisions to be made on things like the winter fuel allowance, there was a few around me, didn't clap, didn't stand up, and I think there is, you know, people I've spoke to around the conference, I've not met anyone that understands or is in support of it, so that bit was interesting. But we'll see what she comes with in a month's time, I suppose.
She definitely struck a more kind of positive tone, she was smiling a lot, you know, "change begins" is the slogan of the conference. Did you feel like she inspired a bit more hope than, say, Keir Starmer in the Rose Garden a few weeks ago when he was talking about things are only going to get worse before they get better?
I think so. And I think, you know, there was a little bit of policy there about conferences that she's going to hold and there's going to be a new industrial strategy. I think it was interesting, you know, she's keen to ensure that she's speaking for businesses and workers. There was talk about stopping fire and rehire and 0 hours contracts and a little nod to Angela. So I think whether she sort of read the room a little bit afterwards, because I don't think the doom and gloom really did the party much favours and the government much favours, because I think after 14 years people are fed up and they need that little bit of something to grab hold of. So yeah, I think on that note, I think it was positive, yeah.
So I'm here with Matt Rack, who is General Secretary for the Fibre Grades Union. We're talking about Rachel Reeves' speech. What was your reaction to her speech today?
I thought some of it was welcome and some of it raised some questions. I think people will welcome things like the review of COVID contracts, and, you know, I think that's a national scandal. It should be addressed, and if there's ways of getting money back for the taxpayer, then we should do that, so that's welcome. I welcome the pledge that there will be no return to austerity, but the proof of the pudding's in the eating, and, you know, the winter fuel policy is an austerity measure in our view, and that's why we're opposing it, and that's very disappointing. I think it will have disappointed many, many voters as well, and I think, to be fair to her, she acknowledged that people wouldn't necessarily agree with her on that point.
Do you feel like today's speech gave you a good idea of the sort of measures that might be in the October budget?
No, not really. I don't think it was very forthcoming on what we can expect in the budget, and, you know, certainly I think the unions will be pushing for the no austerity message to be delivered in the budget, and that means, in our view, simple measures like taxing wealth. Some people have done very, very well over the past 14 years, and the majority have not, and the majority of people have been told endlessly to tighten their belts. Wages have stagnated, and people want, I think people want, off a new government hope, a message of hope, and that the living standards will improve and that the cost of living crisis will be addressed. That's what people are looking for, and that's what I want to see out of the budget.
All right, we're on conference floor in Liverpool with Owen Jones. You've seen many, many conferences. I was listening to Rachel Reeves' speech on conference floor and coming in with all the freebie stuff, the football tickets, the Taylor Swift tickets. People were expecting something big to show the difference in the Labour government. We didn't really hear anything. And the word I heard was disappointment on conference floor from her speech. How did you find?
Well, I mean, it's that lack of hope is very clear. There's no vision that's hopeful, optimistic. And talking this doom and gloom has actually had a material impact. Consumer confidence is going down. They're at risk of talking this country into a recession. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, these are the grown-ups back in the room, are they? And I just think they need hope. They need to invest in this country. This country is falling apart, literally, in some places. And they need to raise money on people who can afford to pay, rather than say there's no money to do anything and start punishing pensioners and children, which is what they're doing, balancing the books on the backs of pensioners and kids.
I guess that was going to be my last question, because we don't have you long. If there's one thing you could call on them to do, what would it be? It would be something on hope, right?
Yeah, a wealth tax. Yeah. And use that to invest in our services, living standards, jobs, education, health, all the things which the basic building blocks of what should be a civilised society which has the money, resources and talent to achieve huge potential, which is being held back. They can do that, but they don't want to.
That was the reaction from conference floor following Rachel Reeves' speech on Monday. Ali, if you can cast your mind back to it, there wasn't really that much substance in her speech, was there?
No, there wasn't. First of all, my reaction to my own voice. Why did I sound so nasally there? I sounded like...
I was the same.
I sounded like a Keir Starmer impression. No, actually, what was really interesting about that speech was I listened to it from the exhibition hall at conference, so with delegates all surrounding us. And there was an enormous feeling of disappointment from her speech, largely because you didn't learn anything. A little bit different to Starmer's, and we'll talk about Starmer's speech later, but where Starmer's speech kind of had the rah-rah to get his own supporters, Rachel's speech didn't even have that. So coming into conference when there was wall-to-wall negative coverage of the party from freebies and all that sort of scandals that had hit the papers, no matter what you think of them, they dominated the thought. Her speech, you'd expect it to have some meat in it to kind of distract and to change the direction of the conversation. And she kind of said nothing. And in fact, what she did say was mostly there are painful decisions to come. And that may be the case, and that, you know, I have my own opinions on that, but whatever your judgment on that is, that can't be the only thing you say, because then the listener just goes away feeling really gloomy and fearful of what's to come. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought this whole thing about not returning to austerity was really interesting, because of course it kind of depends on how you define austerity. I think we tend to think of austerity as cutting back on public spending, and it sounds, you know, from everything you were just saying there and from everything Rachel Reeves said during her speech, like that is something that's going to happen. You know, the state is already underfunded, as we know, and it doesn't sound like there's going to be a huge amount of new money there. So to say that you're not going to return to austerity, it's interesting, and I think this maybe tells us something about how the Labour government define it. There's this idea that actually, you know, because they're spending more on the public sector, they've raised public sector pay to 9.5 billion in real terms. They also say that austerity, you know, it was a political choice had an ideological objective of a smaller state as well. They're not returning to that. And this idea that they're already spending more on public services through the abolition of non-dom status. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's going to be really hard to sell that with a public that just associate austerity with no more money for the public services that are already on their knees. And it doesn't matter how many times you say we're not returning to austerity, if it doesn't feel like the state is being funded correctly or services aren't being funded adequately, people aren't going to believe you.
Yeah, it seems like it's actually the word austerity that there's a problem with, a branding problem because of its links to, rather than the actual policy. What was the feeling in, I mean, you are in the press room often and surrounded by media. Was there any reaction from them? Did they expect more?
I think everybody felt like there wasn't very much in there, you know, a completely similar vibe to what you said. I mean, there's always a chance at these things, and we'll get onto Keir Starmer's speech, that new policy will be announced. And that, you know, sends the press room crazy and everyone starts writing up their copy very quickly. But there wasn't really anything new in there. And you could argue that's because Rachel Reeves is waiting for the October budget. You don't want to speculate on tax measures. It's actually in some ways very risky to do so because, you know, markets move and uncertainty spooks them. So it's very much within the Chancellor's interest to keep everything under wraps.
Yeah.
I think the main point of Rachel Reeves's speech was to try and slightly dumb down that thing of, you know, things are going to get a lot worse. I found it interesting what Owen Jones said about, you know, that had already kind of spooked consumer confidence a little bit. But I don't think she was that successful in convincing people that there was hope around the corner, because everything she was saying, you know, as I just said, was kind of hinting at austerity.
A lot of the reactions that I've seen, we've been out of Liverpool for a couple of days now, has been, was there too much doom and gloom, and are they talking the country down a little bit? In fact, Keir Starmer yesterday had to explicitly say that they're not. So I wonder if that's going to be a long-term problem. We don't expect anything major in the budget, do we?
Well, I mean, I don't think we expect anything that's going to kind of make people smile. I think what we're going to see are tax rises and public spending cuts. It's going to be a difficult budget. It's going to be very difficult for Labour to sell. I feel like, I mean, I'd be interested to know, obviously, yesterday, Alia, and I'm not sure if you were still there, but the unions managed to get through their motion on U-turning on the abolition of the winter fuel allowance. And I wondered if you got a sense of whether that battle is going to continue rumbling on and whether the Labour leadership will have to U-turn on it.
Yeah, look, I often end up talking about sort of the political comms element of it, and I hope people don't get bored, but I don't know what genius's idea it was to move that section of conference, because that section of conference is supposed to be before the leader's speech, but someone thought it was, let's push it to the back end of conference, which meant all the headlines coming out of the day of the leader's speech by the end of that day ended up being about the winter fuel cuts, and there's been a whole load of headlines around that. That will definitely wage on, because the trade unions are very, very unhappy. But I mean, the problem that Labour have is, look, everybody's kind of talking about how Labour are getting hit harder than the Conservatives were on similar policy grounds, whether it's from expenses and freebies to the decisions having to be made. The reality is that that's always going to be the case, because Labour is supposed to be the political arm of the trade union movement, and therefore when things like the nurses' rejection of the pay offer comes through, or the winter fuel allowance, or the two-child policy limit, Labour is always going to get hit harder, because it gets hit not just from the outside, but from within its own party. So I think that's very, very likely to rumble on, and we'll probably see more defections in the vote. Because, I mean, on two-child policy limit, we saw the whip removed from some MPs. The winter fuel allowance, also, we saw lots of abstentions, because there are a large proportion of the PLP who are under immense pressure, particularly new MPs who don't know what pressure is like, who are getting those emails in the inboxes for the first time. The problem with the winter fuel allowance, unlike the two-child policy limit, is pensioners can email, and they often do, to their MPs, and that ends up being an issue.
Yes, I mean, I think that's really interesting to see whether that rumbles on. I suspect the government will try and keep this under wraps as much as they can. But come winter, you know, when people are genuinely struggling with rising energy bills, it's going to continue to be a problem. And Labour have sort of backed themselves into a corner on this one. I don't think they're going to U-turn. You know, I think there is a point of principle here that they subscribe to, which is that it's dangerous to U-turn on any policy this early on in their administration.
It's not really Keir's style either.
No, it's not.
He's quite a stubborn man. And I think there are political benefits to that. Look, I mean, it makes him look a little bit stronger. But the problem is, will he be able to hold out given the amount of internal pressure he'll be under from his own MPs? And that, I think that's going to be the key. the key question. Can I just ask you one more question? I thought about this about Starmer's speech, but I thought more about it when I got home, about Rachel Reeves' speech. Not a whole lot on climate.
Interesting.
Yeah, well,
that is interesting, isn't it?
When John, I mean, look, John, we're going to have John on in a minute, and John McDonnell, when he was the Shadow Chancellor, I mean, he was in opposition, so it's a different story, whereas Rachel Reeves is now in government and there'll be all sorts of different constraints on her. But he spoke quite frequently and in his conference speeches quite extensively on the climate arm and the sort of green investment as part of the economic outlook of the country. And Rachel Reeves did so as well early on, because that $28 billion was a large part of their sort of offer before it was scrapped. And I thought it was, you know, often with these sorts of speeches, it's not just what's in them, but what's not in them. That's really interesting. And I thought that was interesting. But we're going to react to the Prime Minister's speech next. So coming up, we'll get the reaction from the PM's new speech, his first speech as Labour Party leader and Prime Minister from a conference in power. So we'll hear from Keir Starmer's speech after this.
FUPAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. Strange fella. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some free videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access All Areas, mate.
Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Now, let's hear from the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, and some reaction to his speech on Tuesday.
In fact, we must. Technology, climate change, the ageing population, the movement of people. This is a time when great forces demand a decisive government prepared to face the future. We can see that again in the Middle East today. So I call again for restraint and de-escalation at the border between Lebanon and Israel. Again, all parties to pull back from the brink. I call again for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the return of the sausages, the hostages.
Right, I'm joined now by the new MP for North Somerset, Sadiq Al-Hassan. Sadiq, what have you thought of conference and Keir's, the Prime Minister's speech?
I found it was greatly uplifting because we're looking at rebuilding the foundations of Britain with fairness mixed into the... Because this is the problem, that people wake up in the morning and they know that everything is broken. This is our inheritance that we've got from the last government. And actually, we have campaigned on a message of change. And the conference is about how we've begun that process of change. Change begins with us rebuilding what was broken. A Britain that works for working people. And it's great to see.
And just one more question for you. You're going to go back to North Somerset, I assume. What are the key messages you think your constituents will take from the first party conference with Labour in power?
There is hope. At the end of the day, they feel beaten up after 14 years. They feel tired. There's no hope available, but actually there is. Things can be better. Britain can be better. And we believe and will bet on Britain to do these great things that we think we can. Innovation, investment, it's all there for the taking.
We're in Liverpool right after the Prime Minister's speech. We're with Councillor Ndukoi from Derby. Give us your initial reactions. What did you think?
It was a grown-up speech from a grown-up Prime Minister.
Your favourite bits?
Well, I think when he laid out just how it's going to be, it's not always going to be rosy, it's not always going to be popular, but these are the decisions we have to make if we want to get the Britain we want at the end of the day.
So you think your constituents back in Derby will appreciate that he's been sort of upfront, going to have to make tough decisions, and this is the way it's going to look?
Yeah, I mean, because if you see what's happened in the past few years, many years, it's politicians just giving you the spin they think you want to hear. Mm-hmm. But what Sir Keir is doing right now is saying this is how it really is. You may not like it. We definitely would not like to do that, but we can't just keep giving it the spin and hoping that, you know, somewhere along the line you either forget or we cover it with something else and then someone else's mess down the line.
So we're now joined by Nav Mishra, who is the MP for Stockport. What have you thought of conference and what did you think of the Prime Minister's speech?
It's the first conference in 15 years with the Labour Prime Minister and Labour government. It's an exciting time. I thought the Prime Minister's speech, particularly the comments regarding asylum seekers, welcoming asylum seekers, but also calling out the racist thugs, was really positive. There is a huge agenda that the government wants to deliver when it comes to employment rights, housing, planning reform, making sure our public services work for everyone, the NHS. It's really good.
That comfortably got the largest cheer on conference floor was the Prime Minister addressing directly the sort of riots that we've seen over the summer. Is that something your constituencies will want to hear, that the Prime Minister is, you know, facing this kind of violence head on?
So absolutely. I think the nation, the people of Stockport and the nation expect leadership from the Prime Minister, and I think that is being delivered. I also think it's really important as someone in the position of being the elected Prime Minister of this country to call out things as they are, which we have seen. We've seen violence. We've seen people attacking places of worship. We've seen people targeting mosques. We've seen people physically attacking police officers, public service workers, and it's simply not acceptable. And we need a clear-cut statement and a vision from the government that they will tackle this, and that's something that has been addressed today.
The Prime Minister spoke about long-term vision. So what would you say, you know, we've got many years to come, hopefully, of a Labour government. What are the top issues that the people of Stockport want the Labour Party and the Labour government to address?
So the single biggest issue in my constituency is housing, the lack of social housing, the lack of affordable housing. We have already seen a commitment in the manifesto, but also announcements since the election with regards to bills being tabled in the House of Commons on planning reform, on house building, on tackling the shortage of social housing, on tackling the shortage of affordable housing. So I think we're going to see lots of progress on that. Also next month, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, we'll see the employment rights bill that will be tabled, and that will improve protection for workers all across the UK.
That was some interesting reaction to Starmer's speech from Labour conference on Tuesday. Ali, what did you make of Starmer's words?
I thought it was slightly better than Reeves's in rhetoric. Actually, in isolation, I think the speech was fine. The problem was that the speech really needed to move the national conversation on from scandal to Labour's agenda. First party conference. This is the reason you have party conferences, is to give you a bump nationally. I mean, other than the votes and stuff, the Labour Party, those kind of votes don't matter anymore in the Labour Party. So similar to America, party conferences have been sort of about setting your mark in the country, almost like, think of it as a season premiere of a TV show. And so the whole point was to sort of set your agenda, your vision, and move the conversation on. When I was there and I did my reactions, which people can see on Instagram, I said it was fine speech in isolation, but I don't think it'll move the agenda on. And I think that's been proven right, because all the conversations in the sort of couple of days since his speech has been on more and more expenses and freebies and that sort of stuff that they've received. So in rhetoric, it was fine. I did think his strongest point was definitely the riots. You saw conference kind of come alive when he was quite forceful, more so than he has previously been, on the sort of violence we've seen on the streets in the last couple of months. And that definitely got the strongest reaction on conference floor. His anecdote about the Lake District, was it? Was genuinely funny, which I enjoyed. I did lean over to someone and say, I'm not sure, because there was a section he said, The woman that was speaking to him said, if I'd known you were a politician, I would have thrown you down the stairs when I had the chance. And he said, doesn't that kind of embodies the British spirit? Not sure I would have said that, but I think people get what he meant, hopefully. Those were his strongest points. The bits I was most disappointed in was there were big chunks of that speech, again, which were swiping at the left. And even if you take away any sort of your own position ideologically, there's no need for him to do that anymore. Mm. His power is completely consolidated. He's the prime minister of the country. There were sections where he was talking about criticisms, which was obviously criticisms from John McDonnell, which have come, who we're going to speak to later. He didn't need to take those swipes. I don't know why he's so thin-skinned on these issues and he allows himself to be drawn into them. So that was quite frustrating. What did you think, Zoe?
Yeah, I agree with you on that second point. I think particularly when the protester stood up and made the point, it was a young man, and he made the point, I think, about Palestinian children, about the time when Keir Starmer had said something about children in this country. I think that was right. It was Palestine rather than the two child benefit camps.
Yeah, it was. I think the kid said, what about children in Gaza?
Children in Gaza. Yeah. Yes. And I just, you know, and this pre-prepared line that Starmer had, which he trots out, which is, you know, we're no longer the party of protest, you know, and then this young guy was kind of strong-armed off, you know, out of the crowd. I just don't think that's necessary anymore. You know, he is a young Labour member. I think we should be encouraging that. And I think it looks bad for the prime minister of the country to kind of dismiss and mock a heckler while they're being strong-armed out of the audience. That's my feeling. I don't think, you know, I can understand why Starmer felt the need to distance himself with the Corbynite left while he was trying to get into power. He wanted to win those voters, but I don't think it's necessary at this point. I agree with you. I thought Starmer's speech took a while to get into. I found it quite repetitive. I found it a bit... His speeches tend to be a bit all over the place. He kind of jumps around and then jumps back. And I find it hard to follow.
If I can jump in there, sorry, Zoe.
Yes.
I have a problem with their speechwriters. As a speechwriter, I spent a lot of my formative years as speechwriters. I've written speeches for many politicians. I think you're spot on. The structures of their speeches are really off. Like, everything's in the wrong section. But carry on. Sorry, I just wanted to drop that.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I mean, maybe we should do a section on another show about how to do a good speech.
Yeah.
Because you'd have some good tips. But I don't think he's very good at painting a picture or telling a story. And I think part of that has to do with his speeches. I would like more symbolism and more of a narrative. And I think Starmer's still struggling to talk about the country he wants Britain to be. I think if you were going to define Starmerism, you'd struggle a bit, you know, you'd flail around a little bit. And I think there needs to be some picture painted in future speeches about what Britain is going to look like at the end of this decade of national renewal. You know, is it more social mobility? Is it more houses and more buildings? And we're leading the way in technology because we finally bridged the north-south divide. Mm-hmm. You know, what does Britain look like in 10 years? And I think that was missing.
Yeah, it's that substantive element. And I think when we talk about the substance, we don't necessarily mean hard and fast policy that we're going to see in the budget in a couple of months. I think people would have liked some of that as well. But talking about national renewal without actually telling us what that renewal looks like in practice, I think comes across as a little weak. I saw an analysis on Twitter from a journalist who I won't out, but they said that talking about national renewal without telling us what that renewal looks like is like saying I'm going to cure cancer with lemon tea, which I think is a harsh analysis, but I think picks up on that point of we need to know. National renewal is a big talking point. We need to know what that means.
What it means
in practice. Yeah.
The bits I found quite good. I thought I agree with you. The same bits you picked up. I liked his words about the riots. I thought they were strong. I was pleased he made that case, which has been so missing from politics, even though it was fleeting. And I'd like him to make it in much stronger terms about if you want a controlled immigration policy, some people will have to be granted asylum.
Yeah.
You know, refugees, this country will always accept refugees. And I think that is a really important point to be made. And maybe, I don't know if I'm being optimistic, but it made me think safe and legal routes. Are they on the horizon eventually? Does he want to do the strong stuff and then he's going to, you know, introduce safe and legal routes? I don't know. So I thought that was good. And I thought there were moments where he was punchy. The stuff he needs to have new lines on, though, is the Tory sleaze and restoring public service, because these lines have been in use since 2021, and I need him to put his money where his mouth is with these and be a bit punchier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to go back to this donor scandal really briefly, this was a perfect opportunity for him to give his brand new ethics and integrity commission a new spin. Say to the public, we're going to launch an inquiry, we're going to launch an investigation or whatever it is into these donations, we're going to assess the rules, and you know, it's perfect because that's Labour's listening to you, and that's what we're going to do.
You know what, that would have shifted the conversation into a more friendly terrain if he'd gone on stage and said, listen, I've heard the criticism and the discomfort around all the noise around money and politics, right? And I have said on the steps of Downing Street the day I got elected that I wanted to change politics to service, and our kind of commission is going to look into money, into politics, and we're going to come up with recommendations, all that kind of stuff, something more substantive than that. I think that would have moved the conversation on, but instead they just didn't talk about it.
And it gives him a perfect opportunity, you know, in all the interviews, as all the more and this stuff comes out, you know, just yesterday it was, he used a flat for his son to go and study for his GCSEs. Every interview you just say, this is now with our commission and we're looking into this and we'll let you know when we have concluded. And then they stop asking, you know, it moves the story on. So I think Labour are missing a trick with this.
Yeah, definitely. So coming up, we'll get more reactions from conference. Don't go anywhere, because coming up next, we've got John McDonnell, the former Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer.
FUBAR Radio.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, do you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuck boy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
Girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You want to go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access All Areas, mate.
Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Right, now let's get some more reactions from Party Conference. John McDonnell, MP, join us, former Shadow Chancellor and MP for Hayes and Harlington. John has been on that conference stage and has given the speech that Rachel Reeves gave us as the Shadow Chancellor at the time of the Exchequer. John, thank you so much, as always, for joining us, I assume, from the safety of Hayes and Harlington. John, I'm going to ask you about both speeches, really, but particularly on Rachel Reeves' speech, because that was your brief for such a long time. I said it earlier on the show, I listened to the speech from the exhibition hall, and whether you're on the quote-unquote left of the party or the more moderates, as they call themselves, of the party, there was universal disappointment in the speech because we didn't learn anything and there wasn't a whole lot of hopeful, optimistic vision elements. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I had COVID, you must probably know, I had COVID, so I didn't get up there until I tested negative and I was no longer infectious. So I only went up there for a day, but I watched Rachel's speech on TV, and I was, when I got up there, I was talking to people, as you know, seeing what the reaction was. And I just, it was the most extraordinary Labour conference I've ever been at. I've been at every Labour conference for maybe 50 years now. We'd just won an election, and you thought people would be euphoric, you know, we're in government after 14 years, etc. And yet it was just, there was like a dark cloud hanging over the whole thing. And I think Rachel's speech reflected that. It was very difficult to lift people because you had all the donations hanging over. And, you know, that started the conference off where all these revelations about, you know, free suits and glasses and all the rest of it, and lots of free tickets that Labour ministers went out to defend. I just thought that was ludicrous. They just should have just apologised.
Yeah, I didn't know glasses could get £3,000. I mean, you've got very nice ones on right now. I don't think they're £3,000.
Then you go into the speeches themselves. So in other words, there's this sort of dark cloud hanging over the conference from the beginning, despite having just won the election. Then you go into the speeches, and there was nothing there that countered the reality of what's going on. And let me explain that. In Rachel's speech, she said, I think about three times, that we're ending austerity. We're ending austerity, that's it. And yet at the same time, people turned up and thought, well, there's a bit of a contradiction here, because if we're ending austerity, why is it we've not got rid of the two-child limit, which is forcing so many children into poverty? And why is it we're just introducing a means testing of the winter fuel allowance, which means, well, you know my patch, Ali, there'll be a large number of people in my constituency who will suffer real hardship as a result of that. I'm worried some of them will freeze, simple as that. So the speech didn't bear any reality to the policies that were being implemented. So therefore, it was very difficult to come away from it thinking, there's a plan here and we know where we're going and we can be optimistic about getting there. So I just, maybe it's me, I don't know. But I spoke to a lot of other people and they found it, although it's, you know, you get the standing ovation in the hall, you can whip that up and all the rest of it, but your rhetoric, people came away thinking we're a bit lost here. We haven't really addressed the issues that people are facing. And it's interesting, if you look at the polls, we're dropping like a lead balloon at the moment in the polls. We're losing council by-elections. In the three council by-elections last week, we lost 19% of the vote in two of them and 29% in another. And that must tell you something. There's something people are angry about. And I think it is that here we've got this contradiction of saying we're ending austerity, then at the same time we're introducing austerity measures. I think also, I think they overplayed their hand in terms of the Tory inheritance. Everyone knew it was toxic. Everyone knew before the election how bad it was. You didn't really need to go over the top and inventing a black hole. It was there already. So again, it was a sort of a depressive thing that they'd overdone. And then it was very difficult to lift people out of that. And I think there is a bit of anger out there now about the Labour Party and what Keir and some of the ministers have done.
So, yeah, very, very quickly, John, because I'm sure Zoe's going to want to jump in and ask a question. The lot of the commentary that I've seen was just gloom and doom. Why was it so gloomy when you have the opportunity to go, here's my vision, after 14 years, Labour in government. Did you feel it was a bit too downtrodden and depressing?
You weren't skipping away from that conference confident about where Labour's going in government or with stuff that you could sell on the doorstep and argue the case. I know this sounds ironic, but it's true, where there has been a series of positive policies like rail renationalisation, bus regulation, the New Deal for workers and all the rest of it, they're terrific. But they're all policies drawn from the 2017, 2019 manifestos. But no one must acknowledge that because the name Jeremy Corbyn can't be mentioned. It's almost like Voldemort within the Labour Party at the moment. It's ridiculous. So, again, they weren't emphasising enough the positive programme that came from the last administration.
John, you mentioned that Labour's approval ratings and Sir Keir Starmer's approval ratings are dropping like a hot potato. To some extent, though, does this really matter? I mean, they've got sort of 5 years locked in. And in that sense, isn't it the case that this is the perfect time for Labour to be making some of those difficult decisions and doing some of those brave things? And that could be, you know, tax rises, that could be tax reform, that could be those things that they could actually speak of very, very proudly. It feels like they're still being quite cautious and still acting like they want to get elected. You know, they're still kind of, you know, hitting the left and, you know, very much taking lessons from the Tory playbook on economics. I mean, do you think they should be braver?
Yeah, you know, I did an interview the other day and I said, if you closed your eyes and listened to the speeches, it's almost like going back to 2010. You would have thought George Osborne was making those speeches. This idea about how bad things are that they've inherited, and therefore it's tough times, so tough and difficult decisions have to be made. It's going to be painful. And what worried me is that in the past, what that's prefaced is austerity measures and cuts. And the issue really is we know how bad things are. We know how appalling the Tories were. But 14 years of austerity, people can't take any more. So the issue is not saying how bad it is, it's then what choice you then make. And if you're making a choice to impose further austerity, I think the problem is, you know, sometimes, I know we've got in government another 4 or 5 years, but sometimes, you know, people make their minds up about you very early on, and it's very difficult to turn that round, really difficult. And at the moment, I think people are making their minds up because we never got elected on we've got a huge majority, but we only had 34% of the electorate. Only, in other words, all of those eligible to vote, only 1 in 5 voted for us. So we haven't got a strong base already. And you know, when times get tough, usually by midterm, you know, you need that strong base to build upon. You need people sticking with you. If we're losing that already, as times get tougher and the opposition reorganises itself and becomes more effective, that's when it's really difficult. So sometimes it's not about this argument, oh, let's get the painful decisions out the way at the beginning. I don't think they should be painful decisions for the most of the working class in this country, because all we're saying to the Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, we know how difficult it is. We know how tough the economic environment is. Make the right choices and do what Keir Starmer promised. Those with the broader shoulders should carry the heaviest burden. So what does that mean? When you're tackling the economic problems that we've got, it means a fair and redistributive taxation system where actually those who've made millions, you know, we talk about billionaires and millions, have made about 500 billion in recent years. They're the people who, with a fair taxation system, can help us get us through the problem, economic problems that we've inherited. So it's all about choices. But I keep warning our side, look, be very careful, because if you alienate working class people with more austerity, very difficult to get that vote back. But worse than that is that if we look at what's happened in France and Germany and elsewhere, and began to happen here with reform, it shifts to the far right rather than it does come back to Labour. That's my real worry. So I'm hoping the window of opportunity is between now and the budget at the end of October. What we've got to do is really convince the Labour front bench that that budget has got to be one that tackles the economic problems, but does it in a way that is a redistributive rather than putting the burden on working people. And my worry is the rhetoric is about more austerity. Even though they say there's not austerity, the contradictions are in the policies that they're pursuing. So I think it's all open to play for at the moment. I think there'll be a large number of organisations that'll be campaigning to express their views. Just as, you know, yesterday, the one major vote that we had on the conference floor was about scrapping winter fuel allowance. That's a genuine reflection of how people feel about the Labour Party and generally.
John, can I ask you, well, let me first off tell you why I'm a little bit more worried today than I was when I left conference, even though I wasn't particularly excited leaving conference. The news in the headlines today has been that it turns out that there may not be enough money generated from the non-dom status being closed than Labour thought, and therefore more money would need to be generated for some of the policies that they've already announced. Now, call me a lefty, but I, you know, a wealth tax or something where the broader shoulders carry that to generate that income to pay for the things that we need for growth is the way I would go. That's not the instinct that Rachel Reeves has shown. Is there not a worry that we may see further austerity measures, given that some of the tax policies that they had announced prior to the election may not generate the income that's needed?
Yeah, there's a real risk. Here's the strange thing. Rachel Reeves, a number of years ago, when I shadow chancellor, she did a booklet called Everyday Economics. And I brought her in for a cup of tea and said, this is great. In fact, I almost accused her of plagiarism because it was almost a repeat of many of our policies. And I said, if there's anything here you'd like to lead upon, you know, please do so. But she said she was busy on other things. It was a really creative booklet. It had things like land value taxation in it, those sorts of things. I thought, this is really good. She's with the flow of where we're going at the moment. And she sort of reverted to type. On the winter fuel allowance, she was advocating the means testing of that over 10 years ago, if not longer. So she seems to have reverted to type. And my worry is, at the moment, the way the thinking seems to be, is rather if the tax revenues don't come in from the proposals they've put forward, for example, non-dom status, which is what we advocate anyway, instead of looking for how you have a more redistributive tax system, they'll then go for cuts in departmental spending or, and this is my biggest worry, a tax on welfare benefits. And you saw, there's a wonderful book that was produced by John Pring last month. He runs the Disability News Service. He produced a book about the role of the DWP over the last 10 years and the impact that's had on people's lives. And in fact, the impact it's had in terms of costing lives as well. We cannot go through another austerity program where you're putting pressure on people who are sick or disabled, etc., because we know the consequences of that. So that is my worry. But, you know, we did a list of all the different measures you could take in terms of taxation. But one of them, I keep raising this, we spend about 100 billion on tax reliefs. A lot of that is corporate welfare. Most of those tax reliefs don't even get reviewed. I was asking questions of the Treasury. Half of them don't even get reviewed about their effectiveness. You could save an awful lot of money and then transfer that into funding public services and preventing cuts in benefits. So there's opportunities there if people are willing to take on some of these vested interests, but also if they're willing to be creative too.
Just quickly, John, before we wrap up this interview, I'd love to get your reaction to the unfolding freebies saga. I mean, you said earlier you didn't think shadow ministers had responded particularly well when pressed on it. What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view, as I said, Zoe, my view is just apologise. We shouldn't have been doing this. Apologise. And just move on from that, because it's not going to go away, this. I went to the theatre last night to see Mark Rylance in Juno and the Paycock. I love it's a short O'Casey play. If anyone gets a chance to see it, go and see it. As I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking bloke through, a bloke says very loudly, it's John McDonald. Has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. But that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals. It damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not. So I think the best thing on all of that, just come clean. This is what I got. I think it was a mistake. I apologise. Won't happen again, and move on. Going out there and trying defending some of this stuff, I think has made it even worse. It really has, and damages politics overall. That's my big fear about this.
Yeah, some of the answers to the questions asked by journalists, by senior cabinet members, I could not believe had been okayed by any comms team of any basic competence. But I think you're right, John. That was my worry at conference as well. What's ended up happening ultimately is 3 or 4 days of a conference later, probably millions of pounds spent, and the headlines are the same before we went in. Nothing has changed. So I wonder if anything will, unless serious action is taken. John,
I don't know who's dealing with their communications, but they need to get a grip.
Yeah.
Because just briefly before I go, in the King's Speech debate, which is really setting out what you're going to do, what was the main issue? It wasn't about the progressive policies that we're advocating. It was about the scrapping the two-child limit and the row over that. Then we come out of that and we're running up to the conference. What happens? They impose the winter fuel allowance cut, completely unnecessary. So that dominates the media for 2 weeks. Then we go into conference and we've got all the stuff.
No,
about
it's freebies, yeah.
The free gifts. It's just extraordinarily badly managed. And I've said to Keir's people, you know, you need to sort yourselves out, because this is amateur night half the time.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate your time. That's John McDonnell, former Shadow Chancellor and MP for Hayes and Harlington. John, thank you so much for your insight on conference. Well, that was John, Zoe. What did you make of his analysis? I mean, look, whether people agree with John or not, he is right. The government, and this was a little bit of my frustration, actually. There's a bit where in Keir's speech, he listed off some of the positive things that they have done, which should have been, is enough in there, you know, from the rail renationalisation bill to ending the NHS strikes, which have kind of crippled our NHS. There's some positive in there, but we keep getting drawn into the negatives because the comms team can't pivot their way out.
Yeah, I mean, what I thought was particularly interesting in what John said was how he spoke about Rachel Reeves having previously been pretty progressive with their views on tax and kind of reverting to type. And we talk a lot about people becoming sort of institutionalized and treasury brained, especially. And, you know, it just feels like Labour, there's never room for radical ideas about tax reform. And actually, I think public opinion is moving in a direction of wanting more progressive taxation policy and more public spending.
Yeah. I mean, the difficulty is John's had the whip withdrawn, so that even that internal debate can't really happen with the party because of the way that they're dealing with opposition voices internally in the party. That can't be healthy, can it? I mean, you agree with John or whether you agree with Rachel, both have, I think, you know, legitimate perspectives to put forward. And in a healthy democracy, they should have it out in the party and one side kind of comes out on top. But that debate is healthy now. But instead, Keir's just kicked them out.
Yeah, and there's absolutely a middle ground to be struck. You know, you don't necessarily need to completely rejig the entire tax system and, you know, tax all wealth, but you can have things like council tax reform. You could increase the top rate of income tax. You could, there are a number of things you could do that would be left policy and centrist policy combined that might create more revenue. And as Rachel Reeves has said, it's all about finding little bits of savings.
Zoe, I've got like 10, 15 seconds. Give me your one or two words, three words to define how conference felt.
Boring, corporate, dull. Boring and dull are the same. But
that is exactly how I would define it. You can't get a better co-host than you.
This year.
It was so dull. That's it from Politics Uncensored today. Join us next Thursday at 5 p.m. where we unwrap the week's political talking points. You can stay up to date with the show by following Politics Uncensored UK on social media, where you can find me at Ali Milani.
And where you can find me at Zoe underscore Grunewald.
If you've missed any of today's show, listen back and catch up on FUBAR Radio. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week for another episode of Politics Uncensored.